Hello, hello, and welcome to another podcast episode of Overpowering Emotions, where I talk all things big emotions, emotion regulation, and of course, resilience. We are on our journey of resilience. And today I'm switching gears from the emotional intelligence to more around coping mechanisms to manage anxiety, stressors, other big emotions while promoting resilience. And that's such an important topic, obviously, when we're talking about this. But before we really dive into some of those coping mechanisms, it's important to understand that nature of emotions. You know, childhood emotions, but any emotions, it's really important just to understand that the nature of them, especially with children, because they feel intense feelings a lot of the time. And especially as they start going into those tween and teen years, there's lots of different reasons why they feel really intense emotions. I mean, some of it is hormonal changes. Some of it is developmental stages, life experiences, COVID, right? And all the stressors that have come out of that, even all of these years, well, a couple years later. But we know that they experience far more stress than any other generation as well. Their emotions can be intense emotions. They can be very overwhelming emotions. So we really need to recognize that what might seem like a minor issue, it's no big deal. I hate like little deal, big deal. I kind of hate that language because it might seem like a minor issue to us, but it really is a significant concern for our children and even our teenagers and young adults, especially because when they're perceiving a situation as very difficult, it's very different from us. You know, we might have our prefrontal cortex online where we can think rationally and see that it's maybe not a big deal. For them, if they don't have that capacity and their brain isn't communicating in the same way and those emotions become just one big overwhelming knot, it is a big deal. And so we don't want to minimize that, right? So we really need to be able to recognize and validate those emotions and create a safe, supportive environment where they feel comfortable expressing themselves. That's first and foremost. It doesn't matter what skills we're going to teach them if they don't have that environment where they feel safe to express their big emotions in the first place. If they're always being minimized, they're going to internalize that. And either, you know, think something's wrong with them, that they're a big baby, or it's going to externalize into these big behaviors. And they're, you know, it just becomes really hard. But when we have that really safe and supportive environment, they can express their emotions without fear of being judged or being told off or being told it's not a big deal and just grow up, stop being such a baby, right? In that environment, when they feel secure and understood and validated, I mean, that's really essential for them to be able to regulate their emotions in the first place. We don't want them pressing them down and becoming these little pressure cookers. When children know that they're not going to face negative consequences, and it's not even punishment when I say negative consequences, just they're not feeling heard and understood, right? Right? If they're not feeling that sort of negated response that other people truly are interested and concerned and validating, they're more likely to communicate openly and share those feelings in the future as well and their experiences, right? Don't we all, like so many parents say, they never talk about how their day was. I try to ask them about their day. I don't know, it's fine. Well, we usually respond in punishing ways. Not that we're being mean and punishing, just by asking all these questions, even if we are interested or trying to be supportive, oftentimes it can feel really punishing to them and they just want to close off, especially if we're putting more demands and we're asking more questions. So we really want to be able to build their emotional intelligence, their coping, their resilience, and their overall well-being. That's the whole point of this journey. So they're going to learn to recognize and understand and manage their feelings when we're able to validate for them and give them some of those things. So as adults, we're really working on our skills in validating our kids' emotions, even if it's a big eye roll and, you know, it's not that big of a deal. We need to acknowledge their feelings, right? They are real. They are valid, regardless of whether we understand the reasons behind them. So that validation is sending the message that it's okay to feel what you're feeling. It's okay. And when we respond with empathy and understanding, it fosters trust. It strengthens our relationship. That's important too, especially when I ask kids to do hard hard things and stretch out of their comfort zone, especially when there's anxiety, right? And we're getting them to face their fears. We can never expect them to do anything like that if we don't have that strong relationship. So that's a huge piece here. One is validating, making sure that they feel heard, but we're building and strengthening that trusting relationship, which without it, we're never going to get them to really learn to cope effectively. And I know I talk about this a lot, but it's important to remind ourselves of this over and over and over, and lots of different things. Okay, so just a couple of practical reminders of creating a safe environment. Active listening is huge. So when a child or teen, they're coming and sharing their emotions or their concerns, we want to give our full attention. So we're maintaining that eye contact. Ideally, though, we're sitting side by side, because then it's not as, you know, there's no sensory overload. They can process. I mean, we need to be able to look away to process. And so sitting side by side is better, but we're not on our phone, right? Like, we are actively listening. They know that we are. I often mirror their body. It's usually subconscious. I'm not consciously trying to. It's just when we're actively engaged, we're in tune with all of those types of things. We're finding truth in what they're saying. We're responding in a way that makes them feel heard and understood, right? And I always talk about my adjectives. That's my little hack. Like, oh, that sucks. No wonder you're upset. Sucks being the adjective. Bummer. Using language that they can relate to, but it's also natural for you. For me, sucks and bummer and those things actually do roll off my tongue quite easily, but it might not for you. So you got to find your language that also fits for them. We're never passing judgment on any of the emotions that they're expressing, right? Even if they're angry. I mean, if they're angry, the function of that emotion is to defend something that's important to them. It could be their opinion, it could be their pencil, but you know, it could be important pencil or just their belonging or their control. Anger is important, so we need to validate that too. It's not about what we need in the moment, that we need them to speak respectfully to us and not swear at us, right? It's not about our needs. It's about addressing what their needs are in that moment. And we're offering that empathy. We're offering that support. In saying that, we're making sure we're giving them space. We don't need to talk when we do these things. We're, you know, if it's there and they're waiting for a response, absolutely. But the bigger piece is just having that safe space for emotional expression, right? That's really important. And it's okay too to set healthy boundaries. We're not going to sit there and take any aggressive acts, right? If they're verbally aggressive, we can acknowledge, I can see that you're really upset. Maybe that they're really upset at us. We can acknowledge that still. We don't have to take hits and bites and, you know, things like that though. So we can set some of those boundaries. Kids do need to understand though that their feelings, no matter how they come out, I mean, those feelings are respected. But it's the behaviors that might not be acceptable, right? Just in the moment of a big emotional upset, we're not going to try to hash it out with them, but we don't need to sit there and take, you know, hits to the face or anything like that. So first, we're always looking at the environment. That's the foundation for healthy emotional regulation. We're looking at that positive relationship, all of those things that are important for now and resilience into adulthood as well. Children who have that environment, they're going to feel confident. They're going to develop the emotional skills to navigate life's challenges. And that's, you know, essentially what we're looking at when we're looking at resilience. It's being able to adapt and respond in effective, healthy, helpful ways whenever big situations that we don't expect to happen, whether it's stressors or tragedy or whatever else happens. So I think it's important to look at that. I do have some articles on this topic just about creating that environment and, you know, effective dialogue and those types of things. So make sure you check out the show notes to get more details on that. Now, the other piece that I want to say too is that when those emotions are really intense, we have to give, again, that space for processing those emotions. And I just want to bring that up because we just want to get in and talk and fix and take away all their emotions. Remember, they need to feel those emotions. That's part of building their resilience, is being able to tolerate all of these uncomfortable feelings. When I do my presentations, I often will share a clip, you know, of, I always get the Marvel character mixed up. I think it's the Black Widow. I can't remember. Her and the Scarlet Witch, I always mix up, but I think it's one of the two. are able to calm down the Hulk, right? When he's angry and destroying everything, they just create that safe space. They don't need to talk, right? There's one clip where she's talking and every time she talks, he's just like, ah, and he's, you know, exploding with anger. But as soon as she crouches down, gets at eye level, just shows that, hey, I'm here. It's safe. I'm safe. Then he's able to calm down. I know it's really hard. And I know it's really hard for a lot of adults, especially if they feel like the child is speaking really rudely, right? And they want to correct their behavior and they want to correct their attitude. And that's not how you talk to adults. But none of that is helpful. We cannot do that. What they need is the time and space to process those emotions. They are in one big knot. So we need to, and they're going to do whatever they can just to get, you know, to protect themselves and get everything else away from them. So, you know, that makes sense. And so they need to make sense of it. They need to make sense of the situation. They need that time and space to be able to process the situation. You getting in their face is disrupting that. And it disrupts their ability to self-regulate and manage and tolerate those emotions. We're just going to escalate and refuel it. Because emotions, remember, they only last 90 seconds. If their tantrum or outburst is lasting longer, it's because something keeps escalating, keeps re-triggering it. But they need to learn how to manage those emotions independently. It's a vital skill for their emotional well-being. So we cannot keep getting in their face. We need that space. Pushing a child or a teen to talk or to respond when they're not ready, that's just going to lead to conflict, power struggles, resistance, whatever. It's going to lead to bad behavior, or I don't want to say bad behavior, just bad situation, a situation that you don't actually want. It's only going to escalate the situation. It's going to make them even more upset and even more, you know, resistant to you. If they're already overwhelmed with that big knot of emotions, we're just going to make it worse. So one point that we really need to remember is that during this time, when they're highly upset, their sensory system, it becomes so overwhelmed. Their physiological responses are triggered. And so that goes into the fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, right? And that really affects their perception. If their stress response is triggered, their sensory sensitivities are going to be heightened. When that fight, flight is triggered, you know, the helpful responses are going to be overridden by survival responses. That prefrontal cortex, the rational thinking, the problem solving, keeping calm part of the brain is going to go offline. So again, no talking is going to help. It's going to go in one ear and out the other. They won't be able to concentrate. They're not going to be able to process what we're saying. So then that could lead to misunderstanding, right, of whatever we're saying. And even if we're like in there, hey, bud, how can I help? They're going to be like, stop yelling at me. Everything is heightened. A lot of times when they're so triggered, they can't even make the sound of our voice. And when we look at the research, when they're escalated and that fight flight response is taken over, it's looking at low level sort of rumbling. Like think of a cat, a big cat, like a cougar growling, right? So their sensory auditory senses are going to be looking for that really low level sort of growling. And they're not even going to register our voices. We're just going to add to the frustration. It's only going to get worse, right? They're already in this intense emotional state. We're just going to make it more challenging for them. And it's going to be harder for them to regain any mastery over their emotions in that moment. Obviously, yelling at a child is never helpful in any circumstance. We're only increasing their stress levels along with ours. So we're just going to be co-regulating this escalation. Co-escalating is what we're going to be doing. And it's sending a message that their emotional distress is not valid. It's not accepted. And that's just going to lead to heightened anxiety, heightened frustration, heightened behaviors. Yelling completely hinders any effective communication, and it's not very effective modeling. We don't want them yelling at us, so why would we want to model those behaviors? It's completely shutting down the opportunity for any constructive conversation, and it's just going to lead to further misunderstandings, further upset, disruption of the relationship, right? It's just going to erode all of those things. Trying to make them feel better in the moment. I mean, all of these things I've talked about, but it's just a really good reminder of some of the traps that we fall into. Even trying to make them feel better is not helpful in the moment. It can really come across as invalidating. It can really come across as we're implying that their emotions aren't wanted, they should be suppressed, that there's something wrong with them, that's just going to lead to them never learning to regulate their emotions, right? They're probably going to, like I said, internalize that something's wrong with them. Whenever they do feel these big emotions, they might try to suppress them, which we know is just going to come out at some point, not in healthy ways. They might then have to turn later on in life, you know, to substances to help sort of cope with some of those things. It's not very effective. So while we are there to be supportive and accepting, trying to make them feel better without addressing the underlying emotions is just going to serve, you know, at best a temporary relief, but it's not helping them promote their coping and their resilience in the long run. So instead of talking or trying to do anything, that's why we just want the space. We just want the space just being there with love, with support, right? It's just that being, just sitting next to them or near them. Like I said, side by side is really helpful rather than facing them directly so that we're not escalating the problem. Just creating that calm space. I always use the analogy of the snow globe, right? If we have this huge storm of emotions and we want all of that snow to settle to the bottom, what are we going to do? We're literally going to put the snow globe down and we're just going to let it settle, right? We can't force it down. It's going to come down on its own. So we're creating that calm space. It's so important, even if they're screaming at you, even if they're screaming, you're the worst parent in the universe, or you're the worst teacher in the universe. We need to put aside our own emotions. We need to put our own need for respectful behavior and just be there calmly in that presence. Okay. We do, like I said before, we're going to create those boundaries. We don't have to sit there and take a beating. Or we can say, I can see you're upset. I'm just going to be over here and wait for you, right? So we still want to have boundaries. This isn't an episode on behaviors because I absolutely think that we need to create really structured expectations and we're going to maintain those when it comes to behaviors. But when we're talking about emotion regulation, we really want to look at this. So the best approach in the heat of that moment, in the heat of the crisis, is really to wait. Right? We're not talking to them until their prefrontal cortex is back online and more receptive to communication. That requires patience because emotional processing takes time. So we need to practice our patience. When they're ready, giving them choices can be empowering. So for example, you know, asking if they want to talk now, I could see that you're really upset. Hey, I'm here for you if you'd like to talk about it. We can talk now. But I'm happy to give you some alone time, right? If they need that time to regulate, or maybe it's later on, especially if you do want to address, you know, certain behaviors or consequences or things like that, then maybe another time. So we want to give them some control in that situation too. That's what we want. And that's another important piece here, right? So when we're granting them the space, we're respecting their autonomy and we're giving them those choices. We're respecting that. So we're reinforcing the idea that they do have control over their emotions and at the pace that they want to process them and that we're here to support them without that judgment. And then we can be there again, or support when they're ready, right? They can then choose to seek it. That's when our support is most helpful, when they are coming to us, not in a dependent clinginess sort of way. It's when they're like, okay, I'm ready to chat, right? So when we're respecting kids' need for space, when we're responding in helpful ways, we're also modeling that healthy emotion regulation. That's so important. Children are learning from us, observing how to manage our own emotions when we're in a conflict situation or a stressful situation. So maybe over the next few weeks, you know, when I focus on the coping skills, you can work on strengthening your skills as well, patience being one of them, and that validating and all of those types of things. So that was a really long sidebar there. I might actually have to put this into two parts because I know that was a long sidebar, but it's really important that we're having that environment before we expect kids to work on skills. I'm always looking at this resilience pyramid and we're making sure their basic needs, it's kind of like Maslow's hierarchy of, you know, of needs, those basic needs, food, hydration, sleep, they need to be addressed. You know, if they're not fed and slept and, you know, having basic needs met, they're going to be in survival mode. So it doesn't matter. We're not ever going to be able to talk because they're only looking out for themselves for survival. then we need to have that supportive environment and relationships far before we ever expect them to work on skills. And that's why I waited a few months before we even started looking at skills. And there's still more pieces to this. But anyways, let's get to some of those coping skills. So I'm going to focus first for today on what they are and why they're important, and especially why they're important for resilience. I will get into the specific coping skills that we need to work on and how to develop them in the coming weeks. We have the whole month to look at these coping skills. So just to make sure we're on the same page, when we're looking at coping skills, they're really the strategies and the behaviors that we use to manage and adapt any challenging situations that come up, any challenging emotions come up, we're using those to adapt well to those. And so they're the skills, they're crucial for building relationships, right? Building resilience in our kids, because when they have them, they can help navigate stressors helpful and any setbacks, you know, any strong emotions that come up, they're coping with them healthfully. So they're not disrupting relationships and they're learning to cope. I mean, that's part of the resilience and being able to respond to stressors and effective ways. So coping skills, it really plays a fundamental role in building resilience, their ability to thrive from adversity and adapt to challenges, grow stronger in the face of difficulties. There are lots of reasons why coping skills provide kids with the tools to manage their emotions effectively. When they can regulate their emotions, they're less likely to become overwhelmed by anxiety or frustration or whatever other big emotion comes up. That emotional control is a cornerstone of resilience because it's enabling them to respond to challenges with a very clear and composed mindset. And that's, you know, the definition of resilience. Coping skills, I mean, they involve problem solving. When kids learn how to approach and tackle problems systematically, they develop a sense of agency and confidence in their ability to overcome some of these obstacles. This problem-solving mindset, that's essential for resilience because it's helping them see the challenges as opportunities for growth. Maybe there's a benefit here. Maybe there's a learning opportunity here. It's not an insurmountable barrier that's going to keep me stuck. Coping skills really equips them with strategies to manage stress. When we have a world filled with all of the pressures our children face, so academic pressures, peer relationships, nagging parents, mean teachers, the vicious social media, the life changes that are thrown at us. You know, COVID was a big piece of this, where just all of our lives were turned upside down. Everything else that they're dealing with, I mean, stress is inevitable. And so resilient people know this. They know that this stress is inevitable. And so they're learning and coping and adapting with whatever life throws our way, because life does throw things our way every day. So resilience is about not only enduring stress, it's not just tolerating it, but it's thriving despite it, right? Being able to fully accept it and embrace it and thrive. Coping skills help kids cope with that stress in healthy ways. They're reducing any negative impacts that we know, you know, the long-term impacts of stress on our well-being. They're able to manage all of that. So resilience isn't about avoiding adversity. We know that. They need to learn to navigate it effectively. And they do that with these coping skills. Those coping skills teach them how to respond adaptively to whatever the challenge that they're faced. So instead of reacting impulsively or going into a pit of despair, which I see even adults do, they can choose constructive ways to cope. So it's that adaptability that's a core component of resilience. And so we'll be talking about that in our journey here. Now, as children and teens develop coping skills and they're starting to successfully navigate the different situations in their life, their self-esteem and their self-efficacy grow. And those are huge. That's especially that self-efficacy. They begin to believe in their abilities that they can handle adversity. They can start to trust in themselves to find solutions or to figure it out or to handle it. So that positive self-perception, that contributes to greater resilience. So many of the kids that I work with, they don't trust themselves. And they become dependent on other people to reassure them, to talk for them, to, you know, come and help them fall asleep, because kids aren't trusting themselves and they're relying. They're creating this dependency trap with other adults. So we really need to build that self-efficacy. Now, we know, yes, life throws us challenges and we know that there's up and down, but it's unpredictable. We don't know what's around the corner. So that ability to adapt to change and adversity is crucial for our emotional well-being to manage some of those unpredictable situations in the moment, right? If a loud noise suddenly comes up, a fire drill or something that really comes up, a lot of kids are scared of the fire drill because it's the discomfort of being startled. And so being able to be startled, but getting our prefrontal cortex back online as fast as possible. Coping skills really help kids learn how to respond when we're startled or, unexpected situations come up, and then finding constructive solutions. And you would be amazed. I've had so many kids. Actually, there's one kiddo that I think of all the time where just terrified of the fire drill. Lots of school avoidance, not going to school if there was a possibility of a fire drill. But guess what? One day, little Kindy came and pulled the fire alarm, and the kiddo that I worked with was actually in the bathroom all by themselves. And so they proved to be so resilient because they got their prefrontal cortex back online. They just knew that they were the ones. They were by themselves. They had to figure it out. They didn't have an adult there. They couldn't, afford to break down. They didn't know that Kindy had pulled the alarm. They thought maybe there's a fire because I'm told when there's a fire drill. So something really has to go on. So went and looked in the bathroom, the closest exit, and went outside, found the first adult, right? And so through that experience, learned, hey, I can do it. I can cope with this. I didn't just paralyze. That's what happens in class, is paralyzed because there's an adult there that I know I can depend on because I can't handle it. But in that situation, they had to handle it. That's why we want to give our kids so many opportunities to show them that us telling them is never going to be helpful. They need to experience it for themselves. Coping skills, it also includes effective communication. And that part of that is conflict resolution as well. Social support seeking strategies, all of that's really important because it enables our children to build and maintain those healthy relationships, whether it's with peers, family, other support networks, coaches, teachers, whoever else is in their life. Those strong social connections are a significant protective factor for resilience. Now, when we're looking at coping skills, it often involves promoting a positive mindset, right? Because then they can focus on strengths and solutions rather than getting sucked into this hopelessness and despair. Now, I'm not saying at the expense of anything negative, because remember, if you've listened to me this whole time, I talk a lot about when we're just trying to negate all the bad things and only focus on the positive, we actually feel worse off and it's harder to do, right? So we don't want to do that. It's a both and. The fire alarm went off and I need to figure it out, right? I've been in this terrible accident and I need to figure out how to move forward in my life, right? So it's a both and. We don't want to minimize the negative. We want to see it and look for how we're going to keep moving forward. That's so important. So we know that when kids, they learn these coping skills in the childhood and adolescent time, that's when we want to focus on it. They're going to help them when they're in adulthood too, because again, a lot of adults have a hard time with this. So it's contributing to their psychological, emotional well-being, even just decision making, right? And relationships later on in life. So we really want to focus on these coping skills to strengthen the resilience. We're laying that foundation for a healthier and more successful future as well. Now, one thing that I do want to mention, which I'm going to get to more again in the coming weeks, is the fact that when kids don't have effective, helpful, adaptive coping skills, they often resort to maladaptive coping mechanisms, right? And as they get to teens, I see so many of them using pot, or they're drinking, or they're self-harming, or even just avoidance, right? So these aren't very helpful. It might feel helpful because it provides temporary relief in the moment, but those behaviors are severely undermining and worsening their emotional well-being. They're stifling their resilience, and it's ultimately leading to long-term harm. So we've got to be really careful with this, right? Essentially, it's because they're not addressing the underlying issues. They're not focusing on skill building. They're not learning how to tolerate those uncomfortable emotions. And so if we're robbing them of those opportunities as well, we're just contributing to that
that problem. And that's why I focus so much on the traps that we fall into. So we're just going to worsen the problems over time. I think the substance use and self-harm are obvious ones, but avoidance is a big one too. You know, I talk so much about it. It's just as bad because we're now contributing to that. We're allowing them to avoid or not go to school or sleep by themselves, or we're ignoring, you know, whatever the stresses are that are in their life or their emotions or situations that are causing that distress. Even little things, you know, like when a student's avoiding studying for an important exam because they're procrastinating, that's going to lead to increased stress as the deadline approaches. So they need to learn how to handle that discomfort, how to manage that procrastination, right? All of those little things that come, even with studying or picking up their dog poo or doing chores, they need to handle that. Anything that they can do to escape discomfort or emotional pain or stress, I mean, it's really the maladaptive coping mechanism. It's just going to worsen their distress or that discomfort because they're never learning how to confront and manage those emotions. So when we're relying on maladaptive coping mechanisms, adults do it too. I've talked a lot about it. You know, I'm stressed, I'm going to drink. I'm stressed, I'm going to go binge Netflix or something like that. It's just hindering resilience. Resilience is built by facing the challenges, facing our fears, learning from them, adapting from them. Maladaptive coping mechanisms, it's not promoting anything that I've talked about. It's not promoting adaptability or growth. Instead, it's just maintaining this cycle of avoidance or self-destructive behavior that just gets worse into adulthood. So rather than addressing those root causes of distress or the root causes of problems, or really it's the root discomfort that we feel, right, of having a difficult conversation or doing these things that we need to do, those maladaptive coping strategies just allow issues to escalate and compound, right? And then they're probably going to cause problems elsewhere too, like straining relationships. Now I'm not doing my studying. I'm you know, accountable to my teacher. My parents are breathing down my neck. That can lead to some social isolation, right? Because now I'm angry and irritable and I'm getting frustrated with my friends. I mean, it just can snowball even from one little thing, and it just makes it challenging to maintain any healthy connections with others. So it's really important that we're recognizing and addressing any of these maladaptive coping behaviors so that we can promote healthier, more effective ways of managing stress and emotional distress. So next week, I will talk more about helpful versus unhelpful ways of coping and getting into a little bit more details of some of those unhelpful ones. I mean, I touched on it, but I just want to look at, because some of them might seem helpful, and I just want to untangle that a little bit, because we really need to get out of those patterns. So I'll talk about helpful, unhelpful coping strategies. After that, I'll be getting into some of the key strategies that we need to focus on and how we can help and how to build them. So I'll leave it there for today. It's a lot to think about. I do want you, though, to think about, you know, if we're looking at the tip of the day, how can I tweak the environment, tweak the relationship, actively listen a little bit more? How can I really build that solid foundation so that when we're ready to go and do the hard stuff and practice the coping skills, they feel safe and supported? And so that's going to be really the tip for the week, is just continuing that, because I think we all can. Even, you know, I teach this stuff. I'm an expert in this stuff, quote unquote expert, but I still am always working on this validation piece and creating that environment where kids do feel safe and comfortable to feel and express those emotions. So go and have a lovely day. Help those kiddos be bold and courageous, and I will see you next week.